Today's show is brought to you by Underbrush, a new thriller by Kevin Carr. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. Only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's show, I'm going to be talking about the new films Insurgent, The Gunmen, Do You Believe, and Zombievers. So very different films, or very similar films, depending on how you look at the world. There's also going to be some news and the trailer park, some box office predictions, and of course, the world-famous DVD roundup. But before we do any of that, this is how you can get a hold of me if you want to reach out and touch. Well, not really, virtually touch me. You can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com or facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. If you want to find me on Twitter, I'm usually lurking around in there under the name twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
That's right, Ron Burgundy. Let's dive right into the news. It was kind of a slow news week. There are a couple little tidbits out there that I think are interesting and sort of developmental news. One of them is in the Fantastic Four movie. Miles Teller, who was in Whiplash, and of course he's in the Insurgent movie that's out this week, but he is also playing Reed Richards in Fantastic Four. He's come out and said, one of the things that made news this week in sort of the geek world, is that he said they will be wearing their classic costumes, which is a little bit of a note, because if you remember back in the 60s and the 70s, their costumes were the blue and the white, very brightly colored costumes that you expect in a cartoon from that time and from a comic book. And it has been a thing lately to go dark with superhero movies, which has been going on really since the 80s. Ever since Batman, with that Tim Burton did, everyone goes dark. And even now, everything's even going darker, because there's sort of this Hollywood backlash against, I guess, a more colorful, a more bright superhero palette like you get with the Avengers. I mean, because Iron Man, even if the stories can be a little darker, it's a bright red uniform, and you've got... in that same thing with Thor, his colors are bright red, and Captain America, red, white, and blue. Whereas, of course, when they did Man of Steel, he wore this much darker suit, and that's, of course, the palette they're using, because that's the whole Christopher Nolan thing. And I've always said, I'm not a big fan of superhero movies going too dark, because they do have their roots in comic books, and especially characters like the Fantastic Four, which has been around since the 60s, and has always been sort of bright and sparkly in their own right, to make them too dark and make them too gritty and grim. It becomes cliche. And that's one of the things I love about the Marvel Cinematic Universe, is because they can make their movies have some pretty heavy-duty concepts and some emotional impact, but it still doesn't look like it was shot on an episode of The Vampire Diaries or something like that. Now, if you go back and you watch the Fantastic Four trailer that has come out, there's no indication whatsoever that they're wearing classic uniforms. In fact, it would look bizarre in the way that Josh Trank has made that movie, at least from the clips that we're seeing. So I don't know how accurate that's going to be. It might be that they just are designed that way, but they're still going to be this dark blue, because the whole palette looks dark. I'm getting a really iffy feel from this Fantastic Four movie, all the way from Dr. Doom being a blogger, because the Fantastic Four have always been sort of bubblegum and pop and brightly colored. Even the Tim Story movies were like that. You may not like those movies, but you know, they kind of were true to the spirit of the Fantastic Four, the original Fantastic Four, back from the 60s and 70s. I don't believe anything an actor says, because they're usually a puppet of the studio at that point. They're not allowed to say things. They're contractually obligated to not say things that would give certain things away or disclose things that go beyond just sort of their acting motivation. Look at the great example was when Star Trek Into Darkness came out, and everyone's like, Benedict Cumberbatch is playing Khan, isn't he? It's Khan. Isn't it Khan? I have seen a video where they question Alice Eve on the red carpet. Is he? Oh, no, he's not Khan. Which is stupid, because she couldn't say one way or the other. She's not allowed to. So why are you even asking her? And you can't accuse her of lying, because she's contractually obligated. That was supposed to be a big surprise in the movie, which it wasn't. Another little piece of news. Liam Neeson is saying he's going to be quitting action movies in the next 2 years. I would imagine so he doesn't have a stroke. I mean, he is getting up there. And it's one thing. He doesn't even have to be in the Expendable movies. He is The Expendables at this point in his career. He's an old guy doing action movie, and he does a great job at it. But yeah, you can't have him running around. I mean, I don't want to see Liam Neeson have a heart attack because he's trying to do just a chase scene. You know, let him go back to doing stuff like Rob Roy and Michael Collins and Les Miserables. I love Liam Neeson. I want to see him do more stuff. And I think his action movies do kind of get a little tiresome at times. And then finally, the last piece of news is not a big surprise, but it is sort of depressing. Kevin Smith has come out and said he's developing Mallrats 2 because we need that movie, apparently. You know, Kevin Smith gets such promise, and I was a real fan of his in the 90s and into the 2000s. But dude, grow as an artist. He keeps going back to the well. He's working on Clerks 3, which you have to sit there and look at what point does it become pathetic? At what point does it become pathetic? How do you make these characters interesting if they're in their 40s and still working dead-end jobs? There's no sympathy for these characters at this point. And then Mallrats, where's he going to shoot this? I mean, there aren't very many malls left. The malls exist, but they're not what they used to be in the 90s, which is when Mallrats was made. Malls are sort of a forgotten breed, and they're malls now that they're open air malls now, and it's kind of gone back to shopping centers. The idea of a Mallrats 2 is so behind the times of making these movies, it is mind boggling. I just wish he'd just either quit or do something totally different, because it's becoming pathetic that he's doing Clerks 3, doing Mallrats. Yeah, I guess people still listen to his podcast, but how long can you carry this on? Your shtick is old and it's pathetic now, Kevin Smith. Sorry. What do I care? He blocked me on Twitter a long time ago. That is it on the news. There's one more thing I am going to talk about, though, and I'm going to throw it into the later segment. And it's because it deals a little more with actual hard news and journalism, but not as much about movies. But we'll talk about it in the later segment. Right now, you hear that sound, and that means it's time to roll into the trailer park. This week, we're going to be covering some Adam Sandler releases, much to the chagrin of many of my colleagues. There are two that actually look relatively decent to me. The first one is Pixels, in which aliens invade Earth in the form of old video game characters.
Some alien life force has sent real-life video games to attack us.
Man's a bad guy?
We're the only ones who can do this!
I'm kidding. We are all gonna die.
Now, when this thing dropped this week, my colleagues, reviewers and critics and journalists, lost their minds over this movie. They were so almost offended by it, which I think is ridiculous. The movie looks okay, actually. And I'm not, and look, I am one of the first people who will come out there and say that a lot of Adam Sandler stuff is crap. I will be the first one to deride Jack and Jill and Grown Ups 2 and That's My Boy and the real garbage that he has cranked out over the last couple of years. But when he does something that's not bad, I'll say it. I said that last year with Blended. Blended's not a great movie, but it's not bad. It kind of goes back to 51st Dates and The Wedding Singer, that kind of chummy charm that he used to have. Pixels looks interesting. It looks cute. I saw the trailer and I'm like, you know what? I could see myself getting into this movie. Because it's not just the same old crappy formula he's done. Now, it might be terrible, but actually, I gotta say, you know, I'm going to cut against the grain here, and I think Pixels looks like it might be kind of fun. The next one I want to hit is Hotel Transylvania 2, which opens September 25th. Pixels opens on July 24th, but Hotel Transylvania 2 opens on September 25th.
Who's ready to fly?
Me, like a superhero.
Better, like a vampire.
I don't know about this.
He's half human. Maybe the kid isn't supposed to fly.
Quiet. This is how they learn. You throw them and they figure it out. Here we go!
Track!
I did that my first time. You know what? He's not gonna fly.
You know, the first one I wasn't a huge fan of, but I thought it was cute enough. I thought it was fine. I thought once it finally got to a story, I like monster movies and I like sort of the wink and the nod. I need to go back and rewatch Hotel Transylvania. Because part of the problem with kids' movies is they screen them on Saturday mornings. And I normally don't like to get up on Saturday mornings, but I got to get up at like 9, which is like a normal day. And I have to go over to the theater and drag my butt over there and deal with a theater full of kids. So I tend to get a little grumpy during Saturday morning screenings. I was a little grumpy during that, but I thought it was actually kind of cool. My kid liked it. So, you know, I'm kind of looking forward to Hotel Transylvania. This is a teaser, so you're not getting a whole lot of the movie from it. But hey, this might be the year of Adam Sandler's comeback. Who knows? We'll see. And we will also see you on the other end of the break. I have to go right now. When we come back, I'm going to be talking about Insurgent and Do You Believe? There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kuykendall Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies, continuing to forge ahead with fearless movie reviews. We are fearless! I'm totally not fearless. There's a lot of things I'm scared of. I am scared of sharks. I am scared of heights at times. I am scared of pollen. I am scared of my wife when she gets mad at me. You know, there's a lot of things that you can get scared at. So, I mean, you don't have to be fearless. But when it comes to movie reviews, I'm fearless. Let's talk about some movies. The first one I want to talk about is the actual name of this movie is The Divergent Series Insurgent. In the second story of the Divergent series, Triss and her fellow rogue Divergents make a plan to overthrow the government.
What does Janine think is in that box, Caleb?
I don't know, but she's testing Divergents, searching for the one who can open it.
Find them. Every last one of them.
Janine's never going to stop coming after us. It's time we fight back.
We don't have the numbers.
We will.
Janine claims you're all dangerous insurgents. If we were to combine forces, we'd be unstoppable.
If you recall, last year I was not a big fan of Divergent. And I think in a way, society sort of agreed with me. It did well. It made like 150 domestic, and it did well overseas. But it was not this juggernaut. It was not this phenomenon that Harry Potter was and Twilight and The Hunger Games. And while I like most of the Hunger Games movie and most of the Harry Potter movies, but I hated Twilight, at least I understand those as being a phenomenon. This has not become a phenomenon. This is does well enough. It's a hit, and it's enough to keep the lights on at Summit Entertainment. But it's not exactly a massive movie, and there's good reason. The Divergent series, I've not read the books, but both of the movies, I kind of feel the same way. This is dumb science fiction. This is really, really dumbed down science fiction. You know, I used to say, like when Ouija came out that last Halloween, I called that a slumber party horror movie. It's only scary to a bunch of 13-year-old girls at a slumber party watching it late at night with the lights off. It's not scary to anybody who has ever watched a horror movie in their life. The same way Insurgent and Divergent before it, those are only science fiction for 13-year-old girls. And that's not a slight against 13-year-old girls. But no one's ever accused 13-year-old girls of being deep thinkers. The same way no one's ever accused 13-year-old boys of being deep thinkers, but they go see the Transformers movies in droves. I may be picking on teenage girls in this one, but, you know, teenage boys are just as bad. It just depends on, they're not drawn to this movie. I never got past in the first film, if this faction system was infallible and how everyone fit into these factions, why you could choose to go in a different faction. Wouldn't that, by choosing to go in a different faction, wouldn't that bust the system on its own? Shouldn't it be discouraging people from going outside of their faction? And supposedly only a few random individuals have the divergent ability to go to different factions. So you would want them to be rigidly structured. So I never got past that in the first movie. It doesn't even make sense. And this movie makes less sense. The best part of this movie is actually the first like 5 minutes when Shailene Woodley, her character Triss, is running around with like the Three Stooges of guys she's banged in movies. Because you had Four, which is the dumbest name in the world. That's the guy from this movie. And they had Miles Teller, who banged her in The Spectacular Now. And you have Ansel Elgort, who banged her in The Fault of Our Stars. I mean, what is this, The Wizard of Oz for everybody that Cheyenne Woodley has had sex with in a movie? But the movie itself, it's so dumbly written. There's a scene, and it happens later in the film. I'm not going to tell you the context of the scene because it's a bit of a spoiler, but the line she says, Triss says to Four, she says, "This isn't going to make any sense, but you have to trust me." That encapsulates the entire Divergent set of films, the two films at this point. None of these movies, nothing about these movies makes sense. If you critically think about these past just the very, accept everything they tell you surface value, they're dumb. It doesn't hold up to any level of scrutiny. Not even, I mean, it's the smallest little bit of intellectual scrutiny. The entire thing collapses like a house of cards. That's annoying. I mean, you know, you want to have, if you do science fiction, you want something at least smart. I mean, like Hunger Games, I wouldn't consider Hunger Games the smartest story ever, but at least Hunger Games makes sense among itself. You know, you're stuck in the district because you were born there. Boom, there you go. And it makes sense why there's such a pushy government and why it's such an oppressive government. This thing makes no sense. Who built that wall? Has no one ever tried to go over that wall? Why can you flop back and forth between factions? Why are the factionless a bunch of homeless winos in the first movie, but then there's suddenly an army in this movie? It makes no sense. And it's just as much about Triss having a boyfriend as it is about her trying to save the world, which is an insulting thing to write for girls. Because again, all these movies, at least Hunger Games, while she plays around with the love triangle between Liam Hemsworth's character and PETA, that's not the driving force of the movie. The driving force of the Hunger Games is not about her boyfriends. The driving force of Twilight is about her boyfriend. The driving force of Divergent is about her having a boyfriend. Now, there's some cool special effects, and the movies look a lot better than the first one. They look like they stepped up their game. They use that shatter effect. They overuse it. I mean, it's like every cool shot uses that. So it's an overused effect, but it looks cool. And it's in 3D, and they have it in IMAX. So at least when you watch it, it looks a heck of a lot better than the first one did. But it's still a dumb movie. So yeah, Insurgent kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Oh, okay.
You're listening to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. The next film I want to talk about is Do You Believe? A pastor is challenged by a street preacher to demonstrate his faith with actions and not just words.
Do you believe in the cross of Christ?
I'm a pastor.
If you believe, then the question is, what are you going to do about it?
What does it mean to believe? It is forgiveness. It is redemption. It is unconditional love.
Just because we're on the street, it doesn't mean that I'm a bad mother.
I did not see this movie. And I did not see this movie mainly because they didn't screen it at all. And there really was no a way to afford to see it. And I'm getting tired of that. And it's one thing for a major studio to do that because they don't screen things. But they'll all screen a lot of other stuff. And it's a give and take. But you would think a movie like Do You Believe would want to get as much buzz as possible. And I remember when I contacted the people who released Mom's Night Out, which was a faith-based movie. They worked their butt off to get me a screener of that. And I remember I saw Heaven Is For Real last year. And I actually kind of liked that. But I'm getting tired of these movies that are striving for an audience, but then they don't want to do any sort of promotion outside of going directly to a church. I don't have a problem with the message or the scripture and the belief behind a lot of these movies. You know, hey, it's teach their own, and if I don't personally believe with it, that's fine. What bothers me about movies like this are when they are just poorly made, and when the need for the mission of making the movie supersedes the need for actually telling a coherent story with decent characters. And that's the biggest problem I've seen in the faith-based movies I've seen. Now, I've not seen all of them. I haven't seen God's Not Dead, But, you know, I've seen stuff like Fireproof, the Kirk Cameron movie, and that thing is just garbage. It's just a bad movie. I'm sick and tired of seeing substandard entertainment pushed on people, and you're supposed to like it because it has good intentions and it's about religion. A movie should be good regardless of the faith that it brings. Like, Passion of the Christ was an exceptionally well-made movie. Yeah, it has this religious message, but it's still a really good movie. But some of these movies are just terrible. The Identical was one of those. The Identical was such a bad movie last year. It was so bad. Left Behind was so terribly constructed. And I'm like, have some pride in your work. And this is why when I was younger and I used to go to like church camp or whatever, I never listened to Christian rock. Because in my experience, it was just not very good music. And that's, I get the sense of the Do You Believe from the trailer. So I'm going to give a preemptive suck.
It sucks.
I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about two other faith-based movies, The Gunman and Zombievers.
Because we can!
Kevin Carr with Fat Guys at the Movies coming back at you after getting in trouble with anyone who is into their faith if they are mad at me for dumping on the general dearth of faith-based movies we've had lately. That's the way it is, man. I don't care what your dogma is coming from. Just make at least an entertaining, well-made film. So let's talk about The Gunman now, which is not a faith-based movie. The gunman, Sean Penn, plays a former Special Forces operative whose sins as a mercenary catch up with him.
You did some bad things. I did some bad things.
Tell me.
We thought we were helping, but it didn't work out that way.
You always worried too much, Jim. The past is the past, my friend.
You keep a diary of the horror we created.
It never happened.
That's the way you want to play it.
With me?
You did your part, I did mine. We all found a way to justify it.
This one has the most notes, not because Sean Penn's in it, not because he trimmed down and built up his muscles and he looks better without a shirt on than I do. The reason this made a lot of news is because Pierre Morel is directed this, and he's a cinematographer and he's directed some things, but most famously he has directed Taken, which launched Liam Neeson's career as a modern action star. And if you watch the trailer for The Gunman, I remember I previewed the trailer several weeks ago on the trailer park. I remember saying this looks like it's another version of Taken. I mean, you look at the trailer and you're like, oh, this is this guy who's a former Special Forces guy who's trying to get out and then somebody kidnaps his girlfriend. Well, they cut that trailer so they could make it look like Taken. So they could say from the director of Taken, this movie is not Taken. I'm just going to tell you that right now. And I'm not saying it in a Lloyd Benson sort of way of I knew John Kennedy and you know John Kennedy. No, I'm just saying it's a very different movie than Taken. Taken was a very simple movie. It was just a guy going after his daughter. This one has a lot more to it. There's a lot more complications in the plot. It's a little bit convoluted. But it's also a much slower burn. Whereas in Taken, the first, half hour of the movie is all the setup. And then Liam Neeson gets a call from his daughter, and it is just a nonstop, relentless action film from there. And that's great. It's a great movie for what it is. That's not what this movie is. It takes like an hour for there to actually be a big action sequence in it. And even then, it has these spurts of action, which are cool, but it is not him relentlessly going after people. It's more of him uncovering, trying to dig through and find out who's after him. And even when you watch the trailer, you're like, oh, Javier Bardem's a bad guy. And he's really not. He's not really a good guy, but he's not the bad guy. It's a very different movie, and I kind of like that. I was sort of poo-pooing it when I saw the trailer back in January, I think is when I saw the trailer, thinking, oh, it's just going to be a ripoff of Taken with Sean Penn and his grumpy Gus face. But it's not. And Sean Penn does okay in the movie. I'm not a huge Sean Penn fan. I think he's abrasive, and he just comes across as being grumpy through everything he does, which is why when he did Milk, like 5 or 6 years ago, that's why that was such an amazing performance by him, because I'm like, I kind of like Sean Penn in this movie. He was very charming and lovable. And for Sean Penn to be that way in a movie, it takes a lot, because he either comes across when he was younger as Spicoli, or it comes across as a jerk in everything he does, even if he's supposed to play the good guy. And he is the good guy in this one. And it's an interesting enough movie. And there's enough of this sort of international intrigue and this plot that you're following around. And like I said, it's a little bit complicated, but then again, international politics is, and it deals with not just international politics in Europe, because yeah, they're kicking around Barcelona and stuff, but it also deals with the politics of Africa, which I remember about 10 years ago, maybe a little bit less. There was this whole string of movies that basically reminded you what a terrible place Africa is. It was stuff like Blood Diamond and Tears of the Sun. And it was all this stuff that took place in like Sierra Leone and just these slums and very, very violent areas of Africa. I mean, you think it's bad some places in America, you go to the inner city, you need to go to Africa where they're wiping out entire villages with no consequence, where they're recruiting children to become soldiers by getting them addicted to drugs. I mean, there's some real evil in this world going on in Africa. And I wish they would have focused more on that, because I found that more interesting as opposed to the people who are just got their hands dirty in it, which is really what's going on in The Gunman. But overall, I kind of like The Gunman. I thought it actually told an interesting story. And yeah, it's slower and it's a little more deliberate. And like I said, you kind of have to concentrate for a while. And it does run a bit long. It also gets a weirdly misogynistic, which is not a big surprise for an action movie, but they have this whole thing with the woman in it, Sean Penn's love interest in it. She is so marginalized, to the point of being property. I mean, she even has a line at one point where she says, well, if somebody saves your life, you owe them. And I've been paying them off by being married to him, kind of thing. And then it just becomes the, let's find her, she's a damsel in distress. And I wish that either they just got rid of her character completely or developed it more. But having it sort of in there, it just seems so archaic, just how she's just a prize to the movie. So it's like I said, it's weirdly misogynistic. I mean, even more than like in Taken, you know, to compare it to Taken, Maggie Grace's character. Yeah, I mean, there's an ownership there, that there's a feeling of ownership there, not just because she's being sold into slavery, but also because Liam Neeson's going after her. But he is his daughter. You feel a certain ownership to your family. That's one of the biggest problems with it, is it should have either just gotten rid of her character or developed it better. Or threw in another couple women, just as long as it's not Ronda Rousey, because she is so annoying. Now she's going to punch me in the face. So I'm going to say the final grade for The Gunman, it kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the next film. This is, of course, sure to be nominated for an Oscar next year. This is Zombievers. A fun weekend getaway turns into a nightmare for a group that stumbles upon a nest of beavers that have been turned into the undead.
What is that? Looks like a beaver dam.
Let's go take a look.
I've had enough excitement for one day. What was that?
Someone in there? There's a beaver in the bathroom! Kill it!
Oh my god!
Is that blood?
Holy shit!
I have wanted to see Zombievers ever since I heard they were making a movie called Zombievers. And after learning also that there is a movie called Zomboobies that was made in Japan, I now want somebody to make a movie called Zombooty. And then you kind of get the whole package, we'll say. So until that occurs, and I haven't seen Zomboobies yet, I kind of want to. But Zombievers, I did get a chance to see. And it's, what can I say about Zombievers that you don't already know? It's a low budget, crappy horror film with some nudity and some blood and guts. That's what you'd expect. It follows a very typical Cabin in the Woods story. Three girls off to the cabin to sort of get away from their boyfriends. And then, of course, their boyfriends show up and there's some sex and there's some bikinis. And there's one woman who takes her bikini top off, which is nice. Thank you. Always nice to have that in a horror. Let me tell you something. For horror directors out there, if you're wanting to make these kind of modern grindhouse movies, because that's all they really are. If this had been made 30 years ago, 40 years ago, it would have just been in the drive-ins. This is a modern grindhouse movie. And I like grindhouse movies. They're fun. They're not quality, but you don't expect that. But if you're going to go out there and make one, for all you film directors out there, these wannabe filmmakers, you can learn a lot from Zombievers. First of all, please put in some nudity. You need some nudity in a grindhouse movie. Nothing is more irritating than when you see a movie with a title called Zombievers and there's no nudity. You should have it in there. Now, you don't have to have all the actresses get naked, but at least have something. That's part of the experience. Then when you make the movies, you can't make the effects too good. In fact, they do a really interesting thing with Zombievers. They don't do digital effects in this movie. They go to standard old practical effects, models and puppets, and real blood instead of digital blood. And let me tell you, it looks terrible. It looks ridiculous. When the Zombievers are swimming, you can just tell they're like little... They got little motors on them, and they're like a, you know, like a remote control boat. But you know what? If they used digital effects, it would have looked crappy too. I mean, let's face it. No one would have expected the CGI from Zombievers to look really good. You can't make the effects look too good because you will never reach the level. You're never going to get Jim Henson's Creature Shop to do Zombievers. Just as you're never going to get Industrial Light and Magic to do Zombievers. You're going to get Joe's Puppet Shack to do Zombievers or Joe's CGI Shack to do Zombievers. Just throw in a lot of blood and throw in a topless girl occasionally here and there, and you've got the movie. The other thing that Zombievers does that is actually quite astute and well done. They're in on the jokes because everyone knows what they're making. There is no question that they're making a movie about beaver zombies. But they are taking it seriously as best they can. They're not winking and nodding at the audience, which is what Troma does a little too much. They're just kind of playing it straight, which works. Because you know they're not, you can't expect them to want to do William Shakespeare's Zombievers, but you also don't want them to do Jimmy Fallon on Saturday Night Live's Zombievers, where they're giggling. Take it seriously, do the movie, and you'll actually get something that might be kind of fun. And with that, I'm going to say Zombievers kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about a Fat Guy Sound Off issue, the box office, and the world-famous DVD roundup. Elizabeth Stokes' new romance novel, Five Nights in Vegas, is about meeting, getting married, and falling in love, in that order. Lexi Frost is a cocktail waitress in a Las Vegas casino. Nate Zimmerman is a marketing executive from back east. After a chance meeting on Nate's business trip, they wake up to discover they got married at an all-night wedding chapel. During their whirlwind attempt to undo their mistake, Lexi and Nate discover they might just be made for each other after all. Five Nights in Vegas by Elizabeth Stokes is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys of the Movies with Kevin Carr. We are in the final segment, but you are still here, and that's a good thing because I'm going to be talking about something somewhat controversial. You should have fun with this one. I might get some hate mail from this. I've actually kind of held back from talking about this for a while simply because it is a bit of a bear trap, but it's just, I've seen this so many times. First of all, in general, slacktivism annoys me. And if you go on social media and you just see people and all they do is just post story after story after, isn't this terrible? Isn't this awful? Isn't this blah, 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 blah. People think they're actually raising awareness by clicking share on Facebook, and you're really not. You're not really affecting the problem. Or people who get indignant over things on Facebook is annoying. Just deal with it, people. And part of the thing with slacktivism is you end up having people scolding the whole of the internet for bad behavior of a couple people. You know, when somebody does something crass on the internet, or they find some awful story and they say, oh, they click, I don't want to live on this planet anymore because some weirdo guy in Hackensack, New Jersey did something weird or mean or awful. It's getting a bit much, and it's getting out of control. And it goes back to, and this is what I have avoided talking about, the whole Gamergate situation. Real quick, if you don't know the Gamergate situation, there was a bit of a question about a journalist who wrote about games and a guy who designed games, and they had a relationship, and some people were questioning whether or not that was ethical. While that's a legitimate concern, it spiraled out of control because suddenly you had these trolls coming on there and giving these threats to the woman. There are rape threats and threats of violence to her, and then that spiraled out of control, and the original issue, which is not an invalid one, was lost, and suddenly Gamergate became about gamers being a bunch of horrible people. Here's the reality. There's nothing wrong with gamers. Say there's 100 million gamers on the planet. Okay, that's a conservative estimate. 100 million gamers on the planet. If 1% of 1% of that, 1% of 1% of 100 million people is 10,000 people. That is a statistically insignificant number. Yet 10,000 people can cause a lot of problems on gaming boards and that sort of thing. And what happened is, when people then suddenly started labeling every gamer as, oh, gamers are pigs, gamers are sexist, gamers are awful, and you're really, no, you're talking about this tiny little percentage of a larger group. And that's one of the things I think that happens when you get slacktivism, is you get people saying, oh, well, you shouldn't judge all women by some stupid thing that happened to you, but I'm going to judge everybody who games on that based on this yardstick. And that's stupid. Here's the reality with trolls on the internet. First of all, you're going to have a lot of people that are just awful people. And they can post just as easily as anybody else can. So you're going to have people who legitimately believe that. But there's also a massive amount of people out there who just want to stir up trouble and just want to create drama because they don't have enough drama in their own lives. Go to any political message. I don't care. Right or left. It doesn't matter. Go to Politico.com. Go to FoxNews.com. I don't care what outlet you go to. Look at the comment sections and you just have horrible comments. And a lot of times those aren't even real comments. Those are just people trying to stir up problems. People will say racist, awful, horrible things in comment sections just to incense the other side because they find it fun. And people forget that. And then people suddenly paint the entire population with this brush of, oh, you're horrible people and you're terrible. No, it's not. So the bottom line is with Gamergate, it's all these threats are wrong and terrible and they should be investigated. But that's a small group of people who are doing this, relatively speaking. And now, this has kind of reared its head again. You got Ashley Judd, who's an actress. And the reason that's why I'm talking about her, because she's an actress. She's been in movies. She was in some TV shows. She's in Divergent, actually. She's in the Insurgent movie. Apparently, she's a basketball fan. Kentucky, I think, is her team. And in the Final Four, and she was tweeting about it. And this is what's so stupid. She started it off by basically accusing the other team of cheating. Well, you know what? When you accuse another team of cheating in a heated sports time, you're going to get people then giving you crap about it through Twitter. You don't go out there and say that team was cheating on Twitter and not expect people, especially if you're famous, not have people come back and yell at you, which is fine. They can do that. Well, then she tweets this thing where she says, this is the kind of typical response I get. And by the way, I'm pressing charges. And apparently she got a lot of vulgarity and a lot of insults. And so I guess there were threats in there. I have yet to see a tweet of hers that actually is specifically threatening her. Like if somebody says, why don't you go blanky blank yourself? That's not really a threat. I don't know how you would enact that to happen. Then she says she's going to press charges for harassment, apparently. But I'm sorry, you should not be able to press charges because you're on Twitter and people are just hit the block button or report them if they're being abusive. And I mean, if they're just being vulgar to you, just block them. If they're being threatening, like actually, if they say, I'm going to come to your house and do this to you, or I'm going to attack your kids or something like that, or I'm going to burn down your house or blow up your car. Yeah, then report that to the police and let the, because there are laws that say you can't do that. But you can't sue somebody for the suggestion that you do something with a bag of something else. And that's what essentially Ashley Judd's doing. What happened to sticks and stones may break my bones, but words will never hurt me. I get attacked on social media all the time. I am constantly taken to task for something or another. Sometimes by my own colleagues, I block them. If somebody's giving me a problem, I block them. If they're just being rude, I'll block them. Who cares? I don't care. I have had that happen multiple times. If you don't like it, stay off of Twitter. Look, on my own website, when I write a review, I wrote a review about Focus, that movie with Will Smith, and I sort of dissed Will Smith, and I said Margot Robbie was better on screen than him, and I think he kind of took it personally, and they're like, oh, you're just mean, and they start calling me names. I let that comment go, and if they would have been abusive on the message, on the comment section, I would have just deleted them. People, we got to just rein this in. You can't judge the entirety of a sex or an entirety of a country or a population just because, my God, Ashley Judd. And then if somebody's threatening to do something of violence or attack you, then call the police. And they will investigate as they would any other threat. But you can't sue somebody just because they swear at you. Let's get a grip, people. Dial it back. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office really quick. Was I correct? Last week I said $60 million for Cinderella. I was under, actually. I was surprised. Cinderella did extremely well. Not a big surprise necessarily. I mean, the amount that it made is a bit surprising, but the fact that it did extremely well, it made almost $68 million last weekend. And that's really great for March. This was not surprising. It was fully expected. Cinderella, good job. It did well. I wasn't totally wowed by it, but the Disney Princess crowd, Disney's got this covered. So this week, I think it's going to be Insurgent. Oddly enough, I don't think Insurgent's going to beat what Disney did last week. I think Insurgent's probably good for about $55 million, which is about on par with what the first one did. I really don't think they're going to be dragging very many more people in. In fact, they've increased it to an IMAX and a 3D release, which is good for the box office. But then again, there might be a lot of people who won't spend the extra money for the surcharge. So while you're going to see it's maybe a slight bump in gross, you'll probably see fewer people seeing it because it's a sequel, and I don't know if a lot of people were just all that wowed by the first one. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the world-famous DVD Roundup. Couple movies this week, nothing huge, but there's a nice slate. The first thing you've got is Top 5, which was Chris Rock's movie. Directed it himself. Actually, a pretty good movie. Very funny. Better than some of the other things he's directed, like, what was it, Head of State, and, you know, what was that, I Think I Love My Wife. You know, this was a much more personal story, and while it wasn't 100% even and didn't work perfectly, it was perfectly acceptable. There's also Exodus, Gods and Kings. This is, of course, Ridley Scott's huge, epic movie about the Bible and Moses and Ramesses, which may or may not be in the Pharaoh that was in ruling when Moses was alive. This isn't bad. I mean, it's okay. I think they're releasing it in time for Easter. So if you're going to be wanting to watch something like King of Kings or Ben-Hur or Jesus Christ Superstar, or any of those classic epic movies, The Ten Commandments, you can watch Gods and Kings, even though that's not really an Easter movie. It's a Passover movie more than anything else. There's also Annie, the remake of Annie, which was better than I expected. And there are some parts that were really charming, like Quvenzhané Wallace. And then there are stuff that just didn't work at all, like Jamie Foxx and just the entirety of any song that he sang. There's also Penguins of Madagascar, which was, I found a lot of fun. Remind me a little bit of Bolt or G-Force. I like animated movies about spy animals. I don't know why. I thought Penguins of Madagascar was a lot of fun. I enjoyed it. It wasn't anything groundbreaking, and it wasn't necessarily heartfelt. It's just a fun little stupid movie about spy penguins, and it was kind of cool. The other one I want to hit on is Song of the Sea, which was nominated for an Oscar. I reviewed it a couple weeks ago, and it's this charming little film, beautifully animated in cel animation, about a kid whose mom is a Selkie, which is in Ireland, a sort of a weir seal, a seal that has turned into a human. And the mom goes back to sea, and his sister, her daughter, is also a Selkie, and they're trying to deal with the fact and what to do with her, and can she go back to the sea, and they want to save her, and they think she's going to drown. Beautiful movie, very heartfelt and sweet. Definitely worth checking out. If you haven't seen it, get it on Blu-ray, because it's gorgeous. Stinker of the Week, I haven't seen this, but I have to say that the Flintstones and WWE Stone Age SmackDown sounds like one of the worst crossovers ever. I'm not a big WWE fan, my apologies to those who are, but I never quite expected Fred Flintstone and Barney Rubble to be professional wrestlers. That is it for this week. Next week, I'm going to be talking about Home, Get Hard, and Serena. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.